Support for Homer Grown comes from Woda Botanicals, a retail store featuring tea, spices, herbal remedies, and books. Plant people focused on food, medicine, and discovery. In Homer at 3939 Lake Street and on the web at wodabotanicals.com. Additional support for Homer Grown comes from Wagon Wheel Garden and Pet, providing plants and garden supplies for South Peninsula's gardeners. Open year-round Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 5. Learn more at akwagonwheel.com and at 907-235-8777. Welcome to Homer Grown. This is a bi-weekly show about gardening, agriculture, and local producers meant to encourage, educate, and empower gardeners. We strive to provide diverse voices by interviewing local experts and garden enthusiasts. We made it to season two, and our mission remains the same. My name is Desiree Hagen, and I live and work on a micro farm in Fritz Creek, Alaska, that specializes in mushroom cultivation. This will be our first show addressing aquaculture. Today, the focus is kelp. We talk with Weatherly Bates of Alaska Shellfish Farms about how kelp can benefit shellfish habitat, your garden, and the planet. Joe Arvidson of Blue Wave Futures PWC talks about the permitting processes, producing kelp seed, and how kelp production can aid local economies and marine ecosystems. We receive a visit from NRCS representatives Tracy Robillard and Jackie Craigle, who talk about an historically overlooked grant available to farmers to encourage their conservation efforts. And Nicola Revelo has your weekly roundup of events in local agriculture. Before we get started, Nicole and I want to thank Mako's Water Taxi for letting us hitch a ride across the bay and then jump from one boat to the other in the middle of Halibut Cove, which sounds way more dramatic than it actually was. As we were leaving the dock, we ran into Mako and thanked him. He then raised his fist and simply said, "Anything for public radio."
Weatherly from Alaska Shellfish Farms here in Halibut Cove. We have about a 23-acre aquatic farm site over here on the south side of Kachemak Bay where we raise oysters, mussels, kelps, urchins, pretty much anything that grows around here grows on the farm.
I wanted just to start out by describing what I'm seeing. So I'm just seeing long lines of different colored buoys, mostly lines of blue and white colored buoys. Is this your oyster farm here?
Yeah, this and over there, it's 23 acres. Out here is where we grow the oysters and the kelp, and then in over there we have some mussel rafts and we grow mussels on
closer to the shore?
Yeah, over on those floating platforms. We patched together a few farms here. We got our own acreage, but also some of our neighbors weren't doing it anymore. Halibut Cove has had a long history of oyster farms. It was, I think, the first place in the state where they started doing aquatic farming, and there was a mussel farm inside Halibut Cove Lagoon. And then in the, I guess, 80s or 90s, they started doing the oysters here. So we got here in 2007, but there was already quite a few established farms. We've slowly gained some acreage. We're out here pretty much every day, year round. My husband comes out and works alone most days because I'll be home working with the kids.
How many people currently are oyster farming here in Halibut Cove?
We're pretty much the only ones out here most of the year. And then another farm over there, they come out a couple days from outside of Halibut Cove. And then our other neighbors have slowly been winding down on their farm and not really doing it much. Oysters is really like our main game.
Kelp is a secondary product. It's not a source of any...
No, so far kelp hasn't been a source of income for us. Most of ours, I'd say like 95%, we don't harvest. When you have kelp, you have to figure out like a pretty big market. I picture a fish tender pulling up and filling up, and they take it, you know, make it into pet food or something. And I haven't been able to find that kind of commodities market. In the traditional markets, most of our seaweed comes from Asia that we import into the U.S. and use it. In the 10 years I've been trying to market it, whenever I call a snack food company that uses seaweed, they've already got a source. It's got an organic label on it. It's packaged. We haven't gone through the organic certification process. It's pretty hard to find someone to do that for you. I think we'd have to get them here from the East Coast. It's such a developing market in the U.S., and it's been so established in other countries that it's just been hard for me to break into a market.
Do you know of any places in Alaska that are working more large scale?
There's some big farms down, I think one big farm in Southeast, and I think they've just kind of started. And one thing that can happen if you're growing kelp is the herring spawn, and their eggs are on the kelp. That's where they spawn. They use kelp. So I think that happened to their farm down Southeast, and they couldn't harvest a big portion. I don't so far know of any large-scale processors. I was trying to convince one of the processors, a fish processor, to experiment with our kelp. Alaska doesn't have a large-scale processor. And the trick would be to get it there in time. When we harvest ours, we like to process it right away.
So I was reading a little bit about you. You're originally from Maine.
Rhode Island.
So East Coast.
Yeah, we lived in Maine and farmed in Maine right before we moved here. And I've spent quite a bit of my life there.
So yeah, you've been doing this. You've been on the water since you were a child.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
My dad, he was a fisherman his whole life. He started at 16. So the changes in the fishery from the time that he fished from 16 to 85 on the East Coast were drastic. He saw in his lifetime just the decline of a ton of marine fish. And that was so impactful on me that there was no more cod. There wasn't swordfish. There wasn't giant tuna anymore. And a lot of things back there had been fished out. I really wanted to work in fisheries and kind of help manage. But when I found I was actually trying to get into it, it was so politically and lobbyist driven and not backed up by science. And my husband, Greg, always had wanted to be a shellfish farmer. If I join him, I can maybe help reduce strain on overfished wild species. And coming to Halibut Cove from Maine, this community embraced aquatic farming. It can be a little touchy in places. You know, I've been in Maine and it was hard to get a site back in the day. Now the perception changed a lot there as well because fisheries are declining and people want to do oyster farming. We're competing, you know, with other resources, fishing and tourism, and we're hogging up acreage out here. So coming to Halibut Cove and having a community that really embraced aquatic farming was awesome. And they really love the farm, and they serve our mussels and oysters here. And everyone eats them and, you know, appreciates all the hard work we do. So
what is the role that seaweed has in oyster farming? Is seaweed the habitat? Is it a food source or something else?
Yeah, you got it. Seaweed, to me, it's just the driving environmental factor out here. It's a huge canopy. By June, it's just thick. I'm holding a piece now, and I mean, it's already up to my chin, and I'm 5'10", so it's pretty big. And this just grows naturally on our farm. So when the oyster farm started, they always just had seaweed growing. And probably about 10 years ago, I started thinking this could be a product that we sell. So we started drying it.
So that seaweed that you're holding, it's, let's say, maybe 6 feet long, 12 inches wide, kind of ruffled. What kind of seaweed is that?
This is a five rib kelp, and it's kind of the first kelp that grows on the farm. I think a kelp says perennial. They do reset. They have a really complicated life history. Kelp, it forms a spore packet and then releases in the fall, and the gametes settle on the lines and they grow during the winter. So this kelp, it's reproductive. It'll seed itself naturally. Do you want to try it?
Just eat it?
Yeah, you can just like bite that part off. Not the hold fast. I would just like bite it sideways. Yeah.
Yum.
The hold fast is a part that holds the kelp onto the lines, as you can see. And then the stipe is almost like the little tree trunk of the kelp that leads to the blade or the frond. My daughter, she just sits out here with us and eats it, like the whole plant. It just kind of always has grown, and I'm just starting to learn more. But this other kelp, this isn't it, it's sugar kelp. It's pretty small right now, only a couple inches, and it's more on our oyster gear. But that grows, and we dry it and sell it as food.
Where do you sell the kelp?
Saviemore and Woda Botanicals, and we also have a website, alaskashellfish.net.
I could eat this every day.
Isn't it good? And it's so nutritious. It has tons of vitamins and minerals, iodine. It's super healthy for you and good for the planet. A lot of the restaurants that we sell to across the country use our kelp. They use it for seasonings. You can actually use it to wrap fish in and cure your fish. A lot of people like to do that for like 12 hours before cooking the fish. I think it might be more of like a traditional Japanese method. I haven't heard of anyone doing salmon with it, but it would probably be worth a try. We eat this as well. So we dry it ourselves on clotheslines. And here's what the finished product looks like. This is kombu kelp, so it's like the sugar kelp. And
would you just eat that, or you add it to soup?
Yeah, I do everything with this. Eat it raw. Like last night, my daughter made seaweed salad, like a wakame almost. I use it on potatoes, rice, pastas, marinara sauce, anything. You don't have to use salt because it's like a salt substitute, and it makes like an umami kind of flavor, and I just find it's awesome on anything. People make smoothies with it. Yeah, you can just eat the whole plant.
What would you encourage somebody who's never eaten seaweed products? What would you encourage as their first venture into consuming?
We do sell the kombu in a 1 ounce package. I think that's a great starter. Also, bull kelp, Barnacle Foods, they make an awesome product of bull kelp pickles. So I think that would be a really good one to try. Scoop! We have an otter that hangs with us, but she was, I don't know what she's doing today. I was hoping she'd come.
What's her name?
Scupper. My husband said she was out here earlier, but she hangs out. She really likes our company. I think she hangs out like a foot from the boat.
Do your kids play a role on the farm?
Yeah, they play a huge role. They're out here a lot with us doing the farm. Right now, we are on the collections permit for the Sea Life Center, so we're getting them some critters for the Sea Life Center, so the kids are kind of in charge of that. I can bring you in the harbor and show you. They set up like a tank and holding system for the Sea Life Center's
when you
creatures.
Say critters, can you be more specific?
Yeah, if I could get this cage up, I probably can. I'll show you. This is like a mast and boom set up on the oyster boat. These are pretty clean. Larvae from like pretty much all invertebrates and fish, when they spawn, they get fertilized and then they float around in the water column. And when things settle out, they end up coming into our oyster gear. Shrimp, worms, starfish. See all these little starfish?
Yeah, the starfish are a predator?
Yes, they are a predator. Yeah, starfish, otters, they're pretty much our main predators. Like you can see here, there's two buoys. In between every buoy is an oyster cage. And so, yeah, they hang down 5 to 10 feet. And then the kelp just lives on the lines. I think they must be at like a perfect depth and the kelp just loves to settle on it. And same thing with larvae and everything else. This is a pretty clean oyster cage, but some of our oyster cages are just like filled with sea creatures. I'll put this down now. So you can do the kelp farming this way, which is, it's kind of considered extensive aquaculture, where we're just letting the naturally seeded kelp grow. And the same thing with our mussels. We just collect the wild seed and grow them. More intensive culture would be, we could get kelp from a hatchery. There's several hatcheries around the state, and with the permitting, you can get a whole seeded kelp rope that you would set out on your farm in the fall and then let it grow. They typically just plant one species. But with us, we get a lot of different kinds of sea vegetables because we're just letting everything grow naturally.
What are the different kinds?
We harvest sugar kelp, dulse, alaria. So the dulse is red, kind of ribbony kelp, and three-ribbed as well. We're gonna start harvesting it this year.
Are there any regulations that come with seaweed cultivation in Alaska?
Yes, this is a permitted aquatic farm. So when we applied through the DNR and Fish and Game, you select the species that you're going to be cultivating. And we have Pacific oysters and blue mussels. The blue mussels, we collect wild seed as well. The Pacific oysters are the only thing we get from a hatchery. So this kelp, we just have it on our operations permit that we will be harvesting just wild set kelp. We decided, because we haven't been able to find a market, a large scale market for our kelp, and there's a lot more interest in the state for kelp. So we decided we would offer a kelp share, and for $25, we're gonna be harvesting a tote load, 10 pounds of kelp and bring it to town for people wet. And then I'm suggesting people do what they want with it. They can experiment with it. They can dry it on a clothesline. That's what I do. Or you can put it in your garden just wet. That's another thing I do, is just make a big mound of it and then kind of till it into my soil. You don't need to wash it. It just, the minerals and the salts are all good for your soil. You can also kind of mulch with it. Sometimes I'll put it on top of the soil, like around the plants, and it keeps the weeds off. A lot of people in town are interested in kelp, and this will give them an opportunity to at least see what's naturally available. We just love just growing it naturally. I think it's the best thing for our environment.
And you have to remove it, right, after a certain time, because it gets so thick in here, you wouldn't be able to get your boat in between the rows, right?
Yes.
So people are, they're able to support you, right? They're able to also encourage the health of this farm by getting rid of a kind of waste product, or a product that eventually needs to come out.
Yeah. Usually we just pull it off and let it go. But recently I've been thinking about how to sequester more carbon. If we let the kelp all go, it's going to end up probably over on the beach, over on the shore, and decomposing and releasing that carbon back into the atmosphere. So the more kelp we harvest and dry and put onto land, the more carbon we're going to be sequestering, putting that carbon back into the soil. Kelp can sequester more carbon 5 to 20 times what one terrestrial acre sequesters. They're actually talking about kelp now as the closest thing to putting oil back in the ground, because the whole plant is photosynthetic. It's not actually a plant, it's more a protist. And it grows so rapidly, it doesn't take any fertilizer, no water. You can use it, people in California are starting to grow it for cows because it reduces the methane gas like significantly for the cows.
They grow it as feed.
Eating it, yeah, the cow fodder. And to grow the kelp, it takes no water. So in a place like California where there's a water shortage, it makes so much sense for them to feed cows kelp.
When you say kelp is a protist, what does that mean?
It's not quite a plant. A protist, it's a macroalgae, so it's more closely related to microalgae. Microalgae is the plankton that's in our water, and then the macroalgae is the kelps and, yeah, seaweeds.
I also was reading that seaweed changes the pH of the water.
Yes, and that's kind of the main benefit, I think, around our farm. Its environmental benefits are amazing. We've started studying it and learning about its benefits. And
from what I was reading too, there were some studies from the University of Washington where they were talking about how kelp could be used to combat ocean acidification in localized areas.
Uh-huh. With ocean acidification, we are so susceptible to what's happening, and in vertebrates and shell building organisms like oysters and mussels, they can't form their shells out of calcium carbonate if the water chemistry isn't right. You get aragonite saturation, and that makes it impossible for them to build their shells. So the wake-up call for us was really when all of our juvenile oysters died in 2011 because of a major ocean acidification event. And then when the harmful algae bloom came and all the seabirds were dying, it was like, wow, what's going on? How are we gonna keep doing this sustainably? It's like, we need to take action now if we wanna be doing this in 80 years. So having the kelp on our farm and knowing that it can protect our oysters, it's an amazing thing. We're actually trying to do a study. I'm working with some friends in Halibut Cove on the positive benefits that kelp has on the oysters, scientifically quantify it, and hopefully find out more so that it could be used in other places, because I have a lot of friends down the lower 48 that do oysters, and their oysters are dying. They need an actual solution, and kelp could be it. Like you're saying, this can actually buffer the pH of our water. So I'm really excited about offering it to the community, a homer, because I feel like you could do anything with it. Make pickles with the stipes. It's an amazingly versatile product. You can use it for fertilizer. I sell it in dried form to SeaGlow, and they use it in their cosmetics. It's amazing on your skin, and you can use it for a biofuel. In France, they actually are making plastics out of it, biodegradable water capsules. I've seen in Asia, like a water pocket made of kelp that you can eat. People make clothes out of it. It's kind of like the hemp of the sea.
Is there anything that you wanted to say that we haven't talked about?
We love KBBI because it's like our lifeline. Out here in Halibut Cove, it's our favorite. The bush lines, our whole family is like, doo-doo, you know? You guys are awesome. Thank you for enriching our community.
Thank you for enriching our community, Weatherly. That was Weatherly Bates of Alaska Shellfish Farms. Her and her husband, Greg, were named the Alaska Farm Family of the Year for 2020. Up next, we hear from Joe Arvidson of Blue Wave Futures PWS. So could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Joe Arvidson. I'm one of the founders of Blue Wave Futures, which is a kelp farming collective located in Cordova, Alaska. My background is I was born in Cordova, grew up in Alaska and Oregon and somewhat in Hawaii to a commercial fishing family, and grew up fishing and went off to school. I studied political science, I studied cellular and molecular biology, and I'm also an attorney. Still heavily involved in commercial fishing. My wife particularly started a boat brokerage, Copper River Boats and Permits, which she deals with commercial fishermen and their boats and permits every day. And I got interested in this mariculture scene. Ultimately, a buddy of mine called me up and asked me if I would help him and a few friends permit a couple kelp farms in Prince William Sound. And I said, absolutely, I would. And I brought in some other guys and ended up starting this company, Blue Wave Futures, which is actually two companies. It's Blue Wave Futures, and that's a holding company. And then there's Blue Wave Futures PWS, which is for Prince William Sound. And that is an operational company that is a farmers collective. Initially, we have seven farming families that are interested in growing kelp in the Sound. And I've been approached by several other families that want to get involved with what we're doing. So here we go.
So I wanted to just ask a clarifying question. I had an interview with someone just last week that has a kelp farm, and I was using the word kelp and seaweed interchangeably. Is there a distinction between the two?
Kelp is a seaweed, but seaweed is not a kelp, I guess is the way to put it. So I would say seaweed is the bigger group that includes kelps. And when we're talking about kelp in Alaska, we're talking about what's called macroalgae, or the brown macroalgae. In our case, we're looking at sugar kelp, ribbon kelp, and bull kelp. Our company is also interested in a red seaweed, though, and that is called dulse, D-U-L-S-E. And it's something that we could potentially grow on land in saltwater tanks. So I think that's the distinction.
Do you have a large market for your kelp?
So as far as marketing, I tell you what we did. So we started with the permitting process because we knew it would take quite a long time, a year and a half or 2 years. We actually got through the system quite a bit quicker with a few of our farms. But along the way, we discovered that we needed more things. And we determined that we needed to figure out how to harvest wild source, that is, you know, from the wild kelp in Prince William Sound, and grow it into seed. And so what we did is we created partnerships through an MOU with Aleutic Pride Shellfish Hatchery in Seward, Alaska, run by Jeff Hattrick, and with the Native Conservancy, which is an Anchorage nonprofit. And we teamed up to do just that. And what we did is we got Jeff's hatchery and Seward kind of up to speed on producing seed. We designed and set up what I believe is the first mobile kelp seed nursery. And that's currently located in Seward, Alaska. It's going to move to Cordova in 2022. So seed was our first bottleneck. We needed to do something. So what I did is I permitted 7 research sites, which we located across Prince William Sound from east to west in certain bays. So that right now we're actually out there growing kelp on these sites. I mean, we're going to use that kelp for market development, palatability testing, and just running biological tests on it to see what it contains. And we're looking for good stuff and bad stuff, like if there's any heavy metals in certain bays, or if there's what the protein, the carb content is, the fats, minerals, etc. So we have the opportunity to get our farms out this year. But back to your question, which is markets, what we've determined is we're going to wait. So we're not going to outplant our farms, because right now what we're doing is we're working on developing products for our markets. And that's our final bottleneck or big hurdle. And we're coming up with some pretty cool stuff, working with scientists in the state of Alaska and outside to develop some products that we think people will like. And to be honest, we're not even looking at food products at this point for human consumption. We're looking at other products such as compost and fertilizers.
You had mentioned developing seed. Is this kelp native to Prince William Sound, these species of kelp?
Yeah, so again, we're looking at sugar kelp, ribbon kelp, and bull kelp, and they are all native to Prince William Sound, and I believe they're all over the state of Alaska. And the reason we need to develop seed is so, and there's rules that we have to follow for fish and game. We have to harvest wild kelp sorus, so I think it's the microscopic seed that's on the plants naturally, within 50 kilometers of our farm sites or our research sites. And what we do is we take that to the laboratory, the hatchery, go through a procedure where we scrape it off and we put it on what we call kite string. And then we embed the kite string with this and we let it grow into what we simply call the seed. Once that seed embeds on this kite string, then we can take that kite string and take it out to our farms and research sites and outplant it. That's the simplest way to put it. But realistically, the kite string is wrapped around a 2-inch plastic PVC. And so what we do is we put that PVC pipe at the end of one of our grow lines, we tie the kite string off, and as we pull that PVC pipe down our grow line, it unwinds the kite string, which in effect seeds our grow lines on the farm. So yes, these are all natural residents of Prince William Sound. If they were not, we could not use them on our farms.
So the other farm that we interviewed, they have shellfish as their primary product and kelp as their secondary, as kind of an integrated system. Is this something that your collective is looking into?
So towards the multitrophic level of farming that you're discussing, right now we're not permitting to grow oysters or mussels right alongside our kelp. We're just not doing it. But there are oyster farmers in Prince William Sound, and I've reached out to some of them, and we are interested in getting into the shellfish side of things as well. There are several oyster farms right next, very close proximity to our kelp farms. And so we're not particularly going to do what Greenway would call the 3D or what everybody else would call the multitrophic species at our farms. But we are interested in shellfish too.
So in the other interview that I did for this episode, we had talked a lot about the environmental benefits of kelp cultivation. I was hoping to hear your take on that.
Yeah, sure. So kelp captures carbon, I guess, to put it in the most simple terms, through photosynthesis, it absorbs the carbon and takes it into its body and captures it. So we're all commercial fishermen. Let me start again. So as commercial fishermen in Prince William Sound, a lot of us lived through the Exxon Valdez oil spill, and it affected our families and kind of changed the way we looked at the world. And one reason that many of us are interested in kelp is because it has the ability to capture carbon. And with the ocean acidification and heating of the oceans, or warming of the oceans that's going on, we feel that potentially planting large kelp farms in Prince William Sound can help alleviate some of the ocean acidification that is taking place. Also, I think that we could make money doing it, because as the kelp captures the carbon, there's a lot of talk now about carbon credits for kelp. And there's not only carbon credits for the kelp absorbing the carbon, and then we remove it from the water, but there's a potential for double credits if we can take that kelp and feed it to cattle, which is one thing that we're looking at doing, and then it helps lower their methane emissions. Certain types of kelp and seaweed, when fed to the cattle and cows, can do that. There's another credit there. So kelp is really cool because it creates economy, it creates jobs, while at the same time it really helps the environment of our Prince William Sound.
Have you received any blowback from commercial fishermen over maybe the water space that your farms are using?
No, I mean, we are all commercial fishermen, or we have been. I haven't fished in the past few years. I sold my boat and all my permits a few years ago. And we have very good knowledge of Prince William Sound and where the fleet, you know, primarily gill nets or seines for salmon, or used to seine for herring. So we have permitted our farms in places where we won't have interaction with them. And if we do get in an area where there could be some interaction, the way that these farms are set up is that during the summer months, when the fleet is fishing for salmon, say, we have to remove our buoys and lines from the water anyway, so they could still fish those beaches along where our farms are in the winter. So you outplant these kelp farms in October, November, December, depending on where you are and what you're doing. And then we will do our harvest April, May, June. So we'll be out of the way of the commercial fishing fleet. So there shouldn't be any conflict. And we have not received any blowback from any commercial fishermen.
Have you noticed any trends in kelp farming in Alaska within the last few years?
Well, I think the trend is there was only a couple people doing it. A friend of mine actually had the first farm in Kodiak. And then, so Kodiak got into it early, and then Southeast, you know, there's a few people down there, and really were the first group to come into Prince William Sound and work towards getting our leases from the DNR and deal with Fish and Game and the Army Corps to actually do kelp farming in the Sound. Now there's really a lot of excitement. I know they had a class recently, I believe it was last week, that was put on by Alaska Sea Grant and some other entities with the state of Alaska Mariculture Task Force. And there were really, I believe there were hundreds of people that signed up to take this class. And the class was basically, you know, what's it take to become a kelp farmer? What's a kelp farm look like? What do you need? There is a great buzz about it. And again, that goes to kelp being so cool that it creates jobs. It creates wintertime jobs for, say, the commercial fishermen that only fish for salmon in the summer. They can work on their kelp farms in the winter. And while doing so, they're helping the environment. So they're helping clean the bays that their salmon are going to return to, that they're going to fish for in the summer. So it's really win-win.
Are you a consumer of kelp? What ways do you use it?
That's a good question. I'm not really a big fan of kelp, to tell you the truth, the flavor. I do like Dulse, the red seaweed. It's really a cool product. It has a flavor just like green lettuce. Really doesn't have a flavor at all. You can do whatever you want with it. Put it on a salad or put it on your hamburger. And it's cool because it's loaded with protein and vitamins and minerals. So it's actually a lot better for you than just eating like a green lettuce. The only kelp or seaweeds I really eat is on like a California sushi roll, I would say, other than that. So I've been in contact with a couple companies. They're both fairly startup companies, but one could be turn out to be quite large, and they're interested in bioplastics. So if you imagine when you go to the store and you get your plastic bags and you take your groceries home, in the future that plastic bag might not be plastic at all. It might be made of kelp. Or when you get takeout food, your takeout box might not be paper or plastic. It might be kelp. I think that's just fantastic. We're also working with another company that's interested in extracting the nutrients from the kelp. And one of the things that they're interested in is pharmaceuticals, as well as bioplastics. And I'm aware of the fact that people have used kelp components for cosmetics, but I've not been in touch with any companies about it myself.
Do you have any plans for Blue Wave Futures, the collective that you are a part of?
Well, our plan is, you know, was to build the foundation for Prince William Sound, again, with our partner groups, Lutic Pride, Shellfish Hatchery, and the Native Conservancy. We kind of took it on ourselves to bring the kelp farming mariculture to Prince William Sound. And as I mentioned previously, we have 7 farming families involved with us, and we have several others that want to get involved. So our goals are to expand. We're working with local processor, potentially 60 North Seafoods, which is a salmon processor in Cordova, to possibly process our research kelp just as an experiment. Just so you know, research kelp we cannot sell, but we can use for scientific purposes. And one of the things we're trying to do is determine how to process it. And then we're gonna use it and try to, like I said, develop products from there. So at this point, we're kind of on hold. We can outplant our kelp, but we wanna get our ducks in the row first and get our markets set up so that we can actually start making some money when we start spending our own money to put our farms out.
So that is all the questions that I have on my list. Is there any things that I've missed or anything that you wanted to share?
I don't know, not really.
All right.
All right, well, thank you.
Thanks
for
again.
The opportunity.
Yeah, right. Thank you so much. And that was Joe Arvidson of Blue Wave Futures in Cordova. Up next, NRCS representatives discuss the Conservation Stewardship Program, an historically overlooked grant available to landowners with a stake in agriculture.
My name is Tracy Robillard. I'm the Public Affairs Specialist for the USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service, or NRCS. And we are part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We are a federal agency. What's really cool about what we do is we work specifically on private land. So we work with farmers and ranchers and forest owners, essentially anyone who's involved in agricultural production across the state of Alaska. And we offer financial assistance programs and technical assistance and conservation planning. All of our services are free. We have field offices located throughout the state. Our Homer field office has a great crew down there who are willing and able to help out private landowners. What we want to talk about today is one of our kind of newer conservation programs here in Alaska. It's the Conservation Stewardship Program, or CSP, we call it. Historically, this program, it hasn't been used a lot in Alaska. It's actually the largest conservation program in the United States in terms of acres. And it's something we're trying to promote and get the word out to growers, because a lot of Alaskans are already doing really cool things on the landscape for conservation. And so we think we have a lot of folks here who would be interested, who would be eligible to apply for this financial assistance. So who's eligible? If you are a private landowner or a tenant and you're doing some form of agricultural production, maybe you have a large garden or a community garden, or you may have a greenhouse, a high tunnel setup. Maybe you've got some livestock. Maybe you're managing some timber. That means you're eligible to work with NRCS with our programs. For the CSP program specifically, we're looking for people who are already doing a baseline level of conservation. This program really rewards those top-of-the-line stewards of the environment to conserve their soil, their water, their natural resources. And the really cool thing about this program is the more conservation you choose to do on your property, the higher the payments you can get from NRCS. So we pay you to maintain your existing conservation activities, what you're already doing, and then we'll also give you additional payments to help you do new conservation activities on the land. And we do have an application deadline coming up March 26th. So if you're interested, we'd encourage you to contact the Homer Field Office. Their phone number is 235-8177. And talk to one of our conservationists down there in Homer, and they can help get you started with your application package and walking you through the steps to do your conservation plan. So with that, I will turn it over to Jackie to tell us a little bit more about how CSP works.
My name is Jackie Kriegel. I'm the program specialist here in Alaska. I'm located in the Palmer State Office, but my duties carry me throughout the state. One of the main programs that Tracy touched on a bit is our Conservation Stewardship Program. It is a little bit different animal than maybe a program that you have heard of, the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, which is referred to as EQIP. CSP has a little bit different rules, some different eligibility, but more importantly, it has a lot of benefits to help stewards out by providing technical and financial assistance. To be an eligible participant, basically you just need to have a stake in agriculture or in a non-industrial private forest. Traditionally, you would think of an agriculture producer or stakeholder as someone that has a large control of larger acres, but with this program, you can really benefit smaller farmers and agriculture producers, whether that is with hay or vegetables or even livestock. It's really popular for our smaller program participants as it provides some different avenues that maybe EQIP, our larger program, would not benefit as easily. There's several different land uses within this program that you can benefit from, and I'll list those off here. It is cropland, forest, pasture, range, associated ag land, and farmstead. Cropland is anything that you produce a commodity crop on. So that could be hay ground, barley, oats, or something as simple as your vegetable garden. Forest is just that, any non-industrial private forest ground. Pasture is maybe a little bit more common in the southeastern part where you're at, whereas range, we get a bit more of that in the northern part of the state where they grow and produce a lot of caribou, maybe some cattle up there. And then associated ag land is any of those odd bits and pieces of your property that don't fall within crop, forest, pasture, range, or farmstead. Those could be odd corners that you don't farm. If you're familiar with the Conservation Reserve Program, if it's something that has maybe expired out of that and it's just not a productive piece of your property. And then farmstead, that's pretty self-explanatory. That's anything that has your home site, agriculture buildings, storage facilities, parking areas. So one of the things that's important is within this CSP program, you have opportunities to choose and select different conservation practices and conservation enhancements for each of those land uses. So for each land use, you are going to work with one of our certified conservation planners, one-on-one with them, and they're going to help you communicate with us what's kind of going on your property. You'll virtually be assigned a ranking point system. That's a type of payment that you would receive within this program. And another type of payment that you would receive within this program, when you would go into a contract with us and select new conservation practices and enhancements, those would be your second payment type. So you would receive one payment for your current existing stewardship threshold and maintaining that threshold. And then your second payment will be the new conservation practices and enhancements on those land uses. This program is a 5-year contract. So if you're familiar with EQIP, EQIP is different in the sense that it is dependent upon the practice that you choose, and that is dependent on your conservation contract length. Whereas with CSP, it's a mandatory 5 years. There is an option to renew. So if folks out there do have a current CSP contract with us, it's a reminder that you are able to renew your contract at the end of those 5 years. One of the common questions that we get is, what the heck is a conservation practice? What is a conservation enhancement? So to put it as simply as I can, a conservation practice is commonly known within our EQIP program. And those are your traditional cover crops, high tunnels, maybe some forage and biomass planting, forest management, maybe there's some thinning or pollinator habitat, fence, things of that nature fall within a conservation practice. Where a conservation enhancement is simply enhancing those practices, which you can talk with your local field expert on in Homer. You will be able to enhance that practice, though you can have a single-use practice or enhancement within your conservation stewardship program. Alaska has non-traditional agriculture producers in a sense of their acreage size. So within the conservation stewardship program, there is not a minimum acreage amount that you need to be qualified. Basically, your qualification is having a stake in agriculture, whether that is through crop ground, livestock, private forests, etc. So something important to think about is, just because you fill out an application, it does not commit you to anything. It's simply getting your foot in the door and allowing you to be eligible for the fiscal year 2021 program. You are not tied to anything. We just really encourage anyone that has an interest in conservation or protecting your natural resources to reach out to your home or field office and start having those conversations. If there's specific questions you have within the program itself and you want to reach out to myself or Tracy or anyone at the state office.
If I may, I think the best line would be our general office line at the home or field office. And that number, the Homer Field Office phone number, is 235-8177. And you can also get more information on our website at www.ak.nrcs.usda.gov.
I'm Nicole from Homer Soil and Water with this week's roundup of news and tidbits on local agriculture and wild habitat too. First of all, I'm happy to announce that the Alaska Food Hub is already open for the 2021 season in Homer. In case you aren't familiar, the Food Hub is the Kenai Peninsula's online farmers market. This is the first year they've opened this early, and they plan to run for a second year in a row all the way until Christmas. The Food Hub's a great way to buy local food. When I checked in a few days ago, they had smoked salmon, locally raised chicken, and the livers too, eggs, microgreens, potatoes, K-Bay coffee, Two Sisters baked goods, locally made hot sauce, jams, and more. Check it out at alaskafoodhub.org. And if you're a person who appreciates moose, there's a talk coming up just for you on Tuesday, March 16th, about the Moose Habitat Enhancement Project going on right now on the Kenai Peninsula, presented by Homer Soil and Water's forester Matt James via Zoom. part of the Know Your Land series of winter talks. Matt will discuss the efforts by Homer Soil and Water and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to rejuvenate overmature willows by willow mowing and other techniques to provide more nutritious and abundant food for moose around the peninsula, including in Homer's own demonstration forest over by the Homestead Trail. No registration is necessary. Find the Zoom link on Homer Soil and Water Conservation District's website or our Facebook page. And lastly, the Homer Garden Club meeting is coming up on Sunday, March 21st. The guest speaker this month will be the Garden Club's own Francie Roberts, who will share her knowledge and experience on hydroponic growing for the home, even during the wintertime. Choosing the right equipment can be confusing, but Francie will cover that too. Visit the Homer Garden Club's website or Facebook page for the link to this meeting held via Zoom. And welcome back, listeners. The Homer Grown team is excited for a great season two of the show. We're happy to be back, and we hope you are too. Until next time.
So I was having a conversation with co-producer Nicole Revelo, who you just heard from, about creative ways of presenting data. Last year, editing a one-hour show would take me conservatively 25 hours. I must be getting faster, Nicole, because this episode only took me 18 cups of green tea, 3 packets of ramen, 1 misplaced thumb drive, 4 words not suitable for radio, and 12 raw Ketchumek Bay oysters. I want to thank Weatherly Bates of Alaska Shellfish Farms and Joe Arvidson of Blue Wave Futures for talking to us about kelp cultivation, the representatives from the NRCS for sharing information about the Conservation Stewardship Program, local musicians Carly Konimak, Kevin Cope, and Ryan Black for contributing their music. Also, Mako's Water Taxi for helping us get across the bay and back. Thanks to our underwriters and to you, the listeners. Questions, comments, corrections, all of that can be directed to Desiree, that's D-E-S-I-R-E-E, at kbbi.org. I've been your host, Desiree Hagen, reminding you to support your local farmer. Support for Homer Grown comes from Woda Botanicals, a retail store featuring tea, spices, herbal remedies, and books. Plant people focused on food, medicine, and discovery. In Homer, at 3939 Lake Street, and on the web at wodabotanicals.com. Additional support for Homer Grown comes from Wagon Wheel Garden and Pet, providing plants and garden supplies for South Peninsula's gardeners. Open year-round Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 5. Learn more at akwagonwheel.com and at 907-235-8777.